Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast with me, Monty Woolley. My guest today is Francesco Maroni Cinzano from the Cold Orchard Winery in the south of Montalcino, one of the biggest wineries in Montalcino and the largest winery that is certified organic. Why did you choose the organic path, Francesco?
Well, it was an evolution, really. Search for quality of the wines brought us to really develop a consciousness that it had to be achieved through the balance of the vineyard with the environment, to making sure the vineyard was producing what it was capable of producing. It wasn't forced into overproduction, which actually weakens the plants, weakens the vineyard. And so by trial and error, and not having used ever extensively chemical products, we came to the conclusion that really seeking the biological control of all the situation, the right balance, the harmony of the vineyard with the environment, a harmonious level of production, were all elements that achieved the kind of quality we were seeking. And this brought us to the organic certification over 10 years ago.
So when you started, probably people thought you were a little bit crazy to do that on that kind of scale. One of the key things about conversion is getting your employees to believe in what you're believing, because sometimes they think that organics will ruin the vineyard and they'll lose their job.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I've been asked on various occasions what have been the most important changes that took place at Cold Orchard with the organic certification, what practices we changed. And in fact, we didn't change that many practices. What really required the greatest effort was changing people's mindset. We are all, especially in Italy, brought up at school in a very Cartesian kind of way, with every action, to every action corresponds a equal and contrary reaction. And well, with organic and biodynamic, it's not so. You have to trust the long-term effect, the homeopathic effect, and in some occasions of the interventions. And that has taken an effort in convincing people and getting them to accept this. And that has happened, I must say. And now, 10, 12 years down the road, results to be seen. The grape grower that's been on the estate for 45 years now, last season, he came back one day in the spring day, warm spring day, and said, the ground is softer than it used to be. He really felt that increase in organic material, in the sponginess of the soil, capacity to retain humidity, and that was the result of the new mindset, which has taken some time to become apparent.
You have an estate in Chile as well, called Caliboro. Are you organic there as well?
Yes. Well, even more so than here, insofar as what I eventually did here in Montalcino and Cold Orchard started over there when I arrived in the mid 90s. I found a rural environment which brought me back to an era when I wasn't even born, before the Second World War, before the introduction of chemical products. Vineyard was plowed with a horse, because nobody had a tractor, and anyway, in any event, the tractor would not enter the old vineyard because of the way the plants are on the ground. So I learned about organic management of the farm and the biodynamics over there, and then applied it here.
Yeah, it's interesting that someone from the, quote, new world learned something from, quote, the old world. And there's that kind of synergy between the two. Ultimately, the goal is the same in both vineyards, but there are obviously slight differences. But your approach is interesting that you're doing it on those two hemispheres. In terms of Montalcino as a region, obviously being one of the biggest producers and a very influential producer, what changes have you seen over the last 10 years that have particularly encouraged you about the future of Montalcino?
Well, I started advocating or rather presenting Montalcino and Col d'Orcia through the reality of the biodiversity of this territory. I've always started my presentations to customers, to visitors here at Col d'Orcia, stating that Montalcino has a unique predisposition towards biodiversity because of a very rich agricultural history going back many centuries, not only wine, but honey and truffles and grains, different grains like spelt, farro, and tobacco, and a whole lot of other crops. And that has latched on. Now it has become the official line of the Consorzio Brunello, of all the producers, and the political authorities, the mayor of Montalcino really believes in it, believes in the potential for growth of this diversity of crops. And I think that's the healthiest approach that we have on the territory and one we must pursue.
Yeah, I mean, Montalcino's got more forest now than it had in the 1850s, so there's a lot of potential biodiversity in the region. And was it you that created Montalcino Bio, the body sort of organizing initiatives?
Yes, with lockdown, we had to scale down our activity, conferences, but we hopefully will resume soon. And we're going to have a biodynamic conference in April, I believe. And that's a vehicle, Montalcino Bio, to increase consciousness in the territory for organic practices and biodynamic practices. And there's no requirement of certification to join Montalcino Bio, just the interest towards protection of the environment.
So how many members of Montalcino Bio do you have at the moment? I mean, just people that are sort of have signed up to the association, whether they're organic or not, roughly?
Somewhere under 100, about 70, 80 associates.
Okay, so there's about 250 wineries in Montalcino, so that's not a bad tally so far. And do you have any other of the bigger wineries, or is it mainly the smaller ones that are joining the Montalcino Bio?
It's mainly the smaller ones, but what I particularly like about the participants, it's not only wineries. You have the school teacher, the pharmacist, the accountant, the architect. So the people of Montalcino, and I think that's important to have this broad appeal, not only wineries.
So it's really about Montalcino, the place, not just Montalcino, the winemakers.
That's right. Yes.
Okay, so should we run through a few of your wines and a few of your, particularly your single vineyard wines or site-specific wines? Which one would you like to start with?
Well, with Rosso di Montalcino, the DOC, and we have a single vineyard called Banditella. There is, in my view, in the production of the wines from Sangiovese here in Montalcino, a big gap between Rosso di Montalcino, a one-year-old wine, and then Brunello, 5 years old. So we decided to produce a Rosso di Montalcino aged in small barrels, in barriques, so not the traditional large oak barrels of Brunello, and for about 1 year, and then we go into the bottle. So this is a wine made from Sangiovese, made from a Brunello vineyard, but it does not satisfy the protocol of production, does not satisfy the required 2 years in oak and 5 years before release. So we call it Rosso di Montalcino Banditella.
Okay. And do you make another Rosso di Montalcino as well, yeah?
We produce a large quantity of Rosso di Montalcino that we call Vendemmia, the red label, Goldoccia was instrumental in obtaining and achieving the DOC status in the year 1983 for this wine. My father was a firm believer in this wine, firm believer that Montalcino could shine with an everyday pure Sangiovese. Sangiovese, we are convinced here at Goldoccia, gives very interesting results for a wine for long aging. But Sangiovese is also a fruity, crisp grape that can give good results in a young, fruity, fresh wine. So we've always believed in Rosso Montalcino, and we produce it every year. We have the 2019 vintage out now with a lot of appreciation by the market. 2019 was a very Rosso kind of vintage.
So when you say that, what do you mean?
A lot of fruitiness, a lot of freshness to the aroma, a lot of crispness to the palate. So very, very suitable vintage for young, everyday wine production.
Okay, obviously you're most famous for, or well-known for, Brunello. Should we run through the Brunellos? Just the Brunello di Montalcino DOCG Col d'Orcia, roughly the production?
The one we call vintage, we produce every year, present on more than 70 countries around the world, and that's the most recognized label. Then we introduced a single vineyard with vintage 2011. It's called Vigna Nastagio, reasonably young vineyard planted in the year 2006 with our clonal selection, everything we have learned on rootstocks, on density of planting, on management of the canopy. And it's a high density of plantation, so it's a wine with a greater depth and a greater intensity of aromas and flavors. To accompany that, we have decided to age it 1 year in small barrels and then second and third year in the large traditional oak barrels. So that's called Nastagio, Brunello Montalcino Nastagio, and we release this wine on the sixth year from harvest.
Nastagio is actually an official toponimo or named place. But regarding the vinification and aging, why do you do it exactly the way that you do it?
Well, we soon realized from the very first harvest that we had, this is also the soil in which the vineyard is planted. We have a greater intensity, greater depths of flavor, greater intensity of tannin composition. And so we felt it needed a little bit more oakiness to the formula. And so we tried to bring in, remaining within tradition, a little bit of modernity, or a third of modernity to our formula, to our very traditional formula. A third meaning one out of the 3 years of oak aging.
You start the wine off in tonneau, in 500 liters tonneau, I think. Is that correct or not?
That's right. Yes, exactly. And that gives us a hint more oakiness in the finished wine, and the wine lovers have liked it a lot. It's been a real success.
But it also softens the tannins, doesn't it? The polymerization of the tannins when it goes into barrel and sort of softens itself up a little bit?
Very much so. Absolutely. That's right.
And the main market for that one, Nastagio?
Well, now we're having a lot of success in the United States this year, but the first market to latch on to Nastagio has been France, has been the Italian restaurants in Paris, where we have a historical position. Goldoccia has been on the French market for a very long time, for more than 30 years now, and they liked it a lot. They are still the largest market for the Nastagio label.
Okay, tell me a little bit about the Brunello Riserva Poggio al Vento.
Yes, Poggio al Vento, windy height. That reminds the fact that we are the part of Montalcino closest to the coast, to the Mediterranean Sea. So we get a lot of the winds from the seaside, and that's the name we gave to this ridge of ancient geological soil that comes to the surface, form a seabed, a more sandy soil than the majority of the land here in Montalcino. There we planted, my father planted in 1974, the first vineyard after he arrived here. And that's where in the year 1982, we decided to separate, keep the grapes separate and produce a single vineyard, one of the very first single vineyards in the Montalcino territory. The composition of the soil gives us a wine with very intense and tight and silky tannins, which require extra year of refinement, of ripening in the barrels, in the oak barrels, in the large oak barrels. And so we keep it 4 years in oak and then 3 years in the bottle before release. So wine that's released on the seventh year after the harvest.
When people read that on your website, and when I read that on your website, I'm thinking, hang on, has he got the numbers correct? I mean, to age the wine that much shows an awful lot of commitment and trust for your viticulture, because you can't make wines like that unless you have top quality grapes.
Top quality grapes and the magic formula of Montalcino, because Brunello has become famous when wine lovers around the world tasted old vintages of Brunello and realized the complexity that the wine can achieve with time in the bottle. So with Poggio al Vento, we just try to stress to the maximum the essence of Brunello, the capacity to age, the capacity to give incredible emotions when you uncork a bottle that's been lying there for a number of years.
What's your favorite dish with a wine like that that's, you know, comes from a top vineyard, has had plenty of aging and has been allowed to develop before it's put on the market? What would you drink that with?
Well, I like to pour it with something that we produce all in-house. We breed some goats here on the estate in the woods of the estate, and so a young goat, and we use all the traditional spices of the Mediterranean woodland, all the herbs like rosemary and bay leaf and sage, and really season very, very, very much this, and roast the goat meat and serve it with the Brunello Montalcino. It's, in my view, great pairing.
I have to see these. I haven't seen these animals yet. Next time I see you, can you take me into the forest? I'd quite like to take some photos of them, if that's possible.
Yes, of course, of course.
Okay, another wine, traditional wine from the region, is the Moscadello di Montalcino. What is that? What is it made from? And why are you such a passionate fan of Moscadello?
Moscadello is another expression of the uniqueness of Montalcino. One way of explaining it is that in terms of the production, historic production of wines for religious functions, the whole of Tuscany produces wines Vinsanto with the Trebbiano grape. Only in Montalcino, since the Middle Ages, as far as we can tell, but probably even before that, It's not Trebbiano, but it's Moscato Bianco. And this Moscato has been in Montalcino for so many centuries that until the DNA testing of the grape varieties came about, many producers believed that the Moscato here in Montalcino, the Moscadello, was a unique variety. And if you go back in history and find the descriptions of the Moscadello di Montalcino, it is the same as produced today. The aromatic component of the Moscato and the nice crisp acidity to compensate the sweetness, and a nice bright color, and very, very enjoyable wine in both as an aperitif and as a sweet wine at the end of the meal. So I always present it as the most important wine of Montalcino, at least from a historical point of view.
Have we missed anything?
Well, allow me to just mention a Cabernet Sauvignon we produce here, because that's, again, another expression of the uniqueness of Montalcino. The climate of Montalcino is capable of ripening a grape varieties such as Cabernet Sauvignon and producing a wine that is can stand up to comparison with Cabernet Sauvignons of any other wine-producing region in the world. So, again, another expression of the uniqueness of the Montalcino territory.
And your Cabernet is called?
Olmaya, Olmaya, a wood of elm trees.
And so the vineyard must be quite old. I mean, I think it was initially planted in 1984?
Yes. I then replanted it in 2006. It was a vineyard, the one planted in 1984, where we learned to manage the Cabernet Sauvignon here in Montalcino. So a lot of trials of different prunings and things like that. It was a little bit tired. I replanted it in the year 2006. We're back into full production and very, very happy with the results with the Cabernet Sauvignon here in Montalcino.
Final question. How do you see, there's been a lot of changes in the last 10 years, 15 years in Montalcino, huge changes in terms of quality, in terms of technique, I think, both in the winery and in the vineyard. What do you think the future holds for Montalcino as an entity, meaning its brand positioning globally and continued investments in winemaking and wine growing?
Well, the complexity of climate, soil, winemakers, all these different variables that come into play and make the production of Brunello so interesting because it is so varied. And I believe that for the future of Montalcino, this diversity of Brunello interpretations is a great richness. Recognizing the differences in soils and achieving a zoning of the territory is another big asset we need to develop. And if we are capable of working on those aspects, I see a bright future for Montalcino and for Brunello.
So the idea is by not delimiting, but giving consumers a bit more information about exactly where the wine comes from, you think that the differences between Montalcino producers will be a unifying thing rather than a divisive thing.
That's right. I have said allow our differences to unite us.
Perfect. Well, I want to say thanks today to my guest Francesco Maroni Cinzano for telling us a little bit about his Cold Orchard Winery in Montalcino and also Caliboro in Chile. Always good to talk to you, and it's always nice to hear someone that has lots of plans and has been successful with previous plans. So that's what Montalcino needs. It needs dynamism, and you're someone that certainly supports that. So thanks very much, Francesco.
Thank you, Monty. Thank you. Good to talk to you. Hope to see you soon.
Sure. I'd like to see those goats.
Yes. You know your way here, so anytime you want.
Very kind. Thank you.
Ciao, Monty. Ciao.
Ciao.
Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through italianwinepodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.